Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Here we are already in our final segment on Circles of Change. It's a real pleasure. I love in-studio guests. Sari Factor, visiting here from Phoenix, where she works, although locally based here in Tucson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. Well, Sari is CEO of Edgenuity. It's a provider of engaging online education solutions that's driven outcomes for more than a million students in schools across the country. The mission is to change the face of learning and really propel success for every student. Really, also importantly, empower every teacher to deliver more effective instruction and really enable schools and districts to meet their academic goals. Edgenuity offers over 185 semester-long courses offering flexible or blended online learning, as well as, we're going to hear from Sari, a variety of other tools and systems to assist. Sari's career includes over 30 years in educational publishing and services. She was president of Kaplan's K-12 division, president of Macmillan McGraw-Hill, president of the Wright Group, and then general manager of Everyday Learning Corporation, and then also leading marketing at McDougall Lytle, a division of Houghton Mifflin. Sari began her career as a middle school mathematics teacher in Illinois, following her BS degree in education from Indiana University, and she also earned an MBA from Northwestern and serves on the national board of the I Have a Dream Foundation, which is a nonprofit focused on providing access to college for students in low-income communities. So the education bug is clearly in your genetic pattern, I would suspect.
Absolutely. My mom was a teacher. I always wanted to be a teacher, and then I got into teaching and found out how really hard it was.
Is that right?
Absolutely. And that launched a great career in educational publishing and technology.
That's right. So you shifted then relatively early in your career then from being a teacher.
I did. I saw the opportunity to impact a lot more kids through publishing, developing educational systems, and just reaching more students
That's
through
right.
the work I was doing that way.
If you look at, though, the pattern of change that's hit your industry, it's got to be phenomenal. I mean, particularly with the onset of the Internet.
You know, actually, it's more slow going than you would imagine.
Is that right? Tell us about
that. You know, I got into educational technology over 30 years ago, and I thought technology was going to change the world, which it has. It's changed how we communicate, how we shop. Almost everything in our lives have been impacted on by technology. But schools have actually moved relatively slowly. But I've seen an acceleration in the past 5 years in a way, and I think it's partly the ubiquity of the Internet. Mm-hmm. Finally, the teachers coming into schools are people who've grown up with the Internet all through school. So there's not as much the student knows more than I do about the technology. There's not as much fear there.
Okay.
I think that has driven it. Also, in a kind of counterintuitive way, the downswing in the economy has fueled some innovation in schools, as school leaders have had to look for alternatives and different ways to do things.
Wouldn't you say also that we're starting to be much more mindful of a different learning modalities of our students? You know, for example, the fact that some students are overwhelmed by the classroom dynamic or the Socratic method, so that they need a more private environment perhaps to do the learning, or the resurgence of homeschooling, but yet knowing they need additional resources to supplant.
Well, ultimately, it's about personalizing instruction.
Yeah, there you
go. And I think that's where online and blended learning have begun to make such an impact. You know, for a student who is very capable and can move much more quickly, with online learning, it really frees him or her up to move as quickly as they can. Other students need more help, and they might need to listen to a segment or see a mm-hmm. segment over and over again to understand a concept or learn about it in a number
different
of different modalities. So the notion of personalization is really what's driving online and blended learning so dramatically.
So, Sari, the word blended learning, what does that mean?
Well, it means it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But put simply, it's where a student uses online education to get their content and instruction, and they have some control over time, place, path, or pace, and some of their learning is also done under the direction of a teacher in a brick-and-mortar environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that blend, it could be a student taking one of their courses online and all the rest of their courses in a traditional face-to-face instruction, or in some situations we see whole schools moving to blended learning, where students come to school a couple days a week and then are totally on their own a few days.
And this is in which age group?
We work primarily with grades 6 through 12 grade students, so middle school and high school students. You have to be really old enough to have that. You know, we talked about you talked about self-regulation in your last segment. Mm-hmm. Students need to be able to be motivated enough to monitor themselves moving through the system and the courses, of course, under the direction of a teacher. Teacher's vitally important here.
So my question would be then, too, this must be on the groundswell of really shifting the teaching profession itself.
Well, the role of the teacher does change dramatically with the implementation of online and blended learning models. You know, it used to be the teacher would stand up in the front of the classroom in a high school and lecture for, you know, 40 minutes or so, mm-hmm. spend a few minutes reviewing homework, answering a few questions. Now the teacher has moved from the sage on the stage to the guide by the side really working on spending time intervening with small groups of students who are having difficulty with the same concept, or, you know, giving student who needs extra challenge, an mm-hmm. extra assignment. So, you know, that teacher's role really changed. Yes. And when you really stop to think about it, most of the people who went into teaching went in to do just that, not so much the, you know, sage on the stage and all the administrative
interesting
work.
Interesting. So that they may, this whole shift and the opportunity that you're saying is helping them unpack and kind of return to who they were that attracted them to start teaching in the first place.
We like to say it gives good teachers an opportunity to be great.
To be great. Yeah, I like that. We're speaking with Sari Factor, who's Chief Executive at Edgenuity Incorporated, based out of Phoenix. So I made mention in the introduction, you've got 185 semester-long courses. Tell us about the other opportunities in the portfolio.
Well, in addition to all the core curriculum courses that you might expect, so your regular English language arts, math, science, and social studies courses, we have a wide range of elective courses that students choose to take. And that's one of the interesting things that's happened over the last years with the economy struggling, as you've seen a lot of school districts pull back on the number of electives they could offer.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so now this is
where
an opportunity to offer many more electives to their students, because we have the curriculum and we also can offer supplemental teachers to the school district if they need that. So we have five different languages that students can study, including Mandarin Chinese, French, Spanish, German, of course, and Latin. And then we've gone pretty heavily into the career education area, where students can take a career elective either just to explore an area of interest or begin to actually pursue a career pathway.
So what does that look like?
So a student might take a course like Introduction to Health Sciences in their first year of high school. And then if they decide they like it, they could pursue a pathway that would enable them to finish high school and begin to test for a certificate immediately. So they could test for a certificate as a certified nurse's assistant.
Fabulous.
Medical coder, which is in high demand today with the advent of electronic health records, pharmacy technician. And then these students could go right to work right after high school for those who choose not to go on to college or not to go on to college immediately.
So this really might be the new model for the technical trade school.
We see that as a huge area. Of impact for us. We're getting great feedback from school districts who've had career and technical education programs, maybe in some of these areas, maybe not, but as a way to augment their offerings and not necessarily have to transport a student to a vocational training center to get that work done. That student could study from home, or that student could study actually on the school campus, something that they haven't had a teacher for before.
So, Sari, is there any distinction going on across the country now? Is one part more on your stage than another in terms of the school districts or the nature of, academic clusters that might nearby, whatever?
It's emerging all over the place. You know, in some places more than others, but, it depends where a state or a school district is on the curve. I mean, here in southern Arizona, you've got lots of models right now. If you look at a district like Vail, Arizona, mm-hmm. they have been in using educational technology for many, many years. They use Edgenuity as a core of a virtual learning center where they've got 85 students who do all their work online But they come into the center several times a week. They're getting help with the teachers that are there, and they really make that the core of their instruction for that cohort of students.
So, Michael, so if as a parent, how would I know, or how does a school know, perhaps, which are the right students to direct in this way? Or is this more self-selected by the students themselves?
It's actually both. Both. We hear from some students that they are interested in this and they really want to pursue an online education. And in other places, the school says, we think these students would be right for it. I mean, right up here at Catalina Foothills High School, they're using the program for credit recovery. These are students who have fallen behind in their credits and need to make up a credit, or they look like they're going to fail a course. They can make up their work through the online learning system that Edgenuity provides.
I something that really caught my attention early on, you used the metaphor of, I can get my content when I want it. I mean, that is absolutely the generation of young people that we have today. My children don't even watch television, other than I find out they're watching television on their laptops because they get a delayed release through some other venue. But the other side of it, it's a dichotomy, because my daughter, who's a freshman in high school, even though her school is 100% laptop, required, accommodated, and she has one, she still takes notes, in her notebooks using her hand. So because that's the process that she's scribing and scripting in her own head. This idea of providing variety is still so important.
Well, different things work for different students, mm-hmm. and I think that's what you always have to keep paramount in your mind, is that, no one learning modality is right for every student. And some students may opt to take this. There are several states now that have mandated that students have to take at least one online course in order to graduate. I think because these states feel like the student needs to experience
it and know what that's about. Yeah.
So much of the learning is, whether is student motivated after you graduate from high school, whether you go on to college or not, or change professions later on in life, you've got to figure out how to learn and to be self-reliant.
Yeah, interesting. Again, we're speaking with Sari Factor. She's CEO of Edgenuity Incorporated. I loved your comment about the teacher now not being the sage on the stage, but the guide on the side. My children went to Montessori education for their early learning, and of course, that was all the role for the faculty then. In fact, they even called them directors or directresses, meaning directing the environment. And so that is many regards. This is a modern day form of it, assisted or accelerated by technology.
Certainly. I mean, I think, for students who are motivated, it's very easy to get on that path, but many students aren't that motivated. Mm-hmm. Now, they can be more motivated when they're studying something they like. So, again, if they get to opt into an elective or into a course that they like, or perhaps they move ahead at a much more quick pace in mathematics or science because they are passionate about that and less so in other disciplines. So online learning really frees the student up to pursue their interests and their goals. Now, of course, every state has requirements mm-hmm. that every student must meet, so we've got to get them through those as well. But I think there's an element of student choice here that's really very, very powerful with online learning.
Well, and I think the other piece of it is, since you said right here in your mission is to make teachers more effective and also to help school district meet their goals, is that not one all size, as a tome I ran into recently, is that one size fits all never does. And that's really where you've come into. The idea, though, that you're giving students not just the chance to catch up where they need to, but also jump starts, is important, I would think, because then if they see that, maybe health science isn't the right thing for me, boy, what a great idea to find that out before you would make the investment of stepping into an associate degree program or a technical college, only to find out that I really don't like that.
Absolutely. And
so
with
the idea
cost of
retention
these days, that money can be wasted very, very quickly.
I remember the day at my children's school when they brought in smart boards for all the instructors, carte blanche, shut the school down, flipped them over in the summertime, and how the math teacher my daughter had, this was sixth grade, he stared at this thing and stared at this thing, and he basically rearranged the whole room so he didn't have to use it because he still needed his chalkboard. So part of what Edgenuity is doing is, are you providing then special programs to power up the instructors that otherwise might not be so facile on the technology itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen so much money wasted in technology where you just bring in a smart board or a piece of tech, whatever that technology
and you end up
is, without really understanding what's the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the strategy behind implementing this new fangled thing, whatever it is. So with online learning, I mean, we work with school districts to identify what their goals are. Yeah. What do they really want to accomplish. So we start with the school leaders and understand the goals. And then we can craft a program that works with those goals. But it does involve training the teachers. There's a lot of professional development that goes in. You know, if that teacher with the smart board in the front had learned about the strategies and ways to engage students in using that piece of equipment, things could have been very, very different. So we spend a lot of time working with the teachers, explaining to them how this, not only how the system works, but then strategies for pulling data out of the system so that they know whether students are on track, how to intervene when students need extra help, how to provide that extra challenge when students are moving ahead quickly.
Yep. Sari, I'm certain that you interact with colleagues and they're in this space all around the globe. Is this unique that's going on here in the United States, or where do we fit in the landscape of global approaches to online learning and blended learning?
It's really happening all over the world. And you know, this trend of personalization, it's happening all over society. Mm-hmm. You know, when you can buy your jeans in exactly the right size and have every measurement taken, or, you know, customize the color and every option in a car, it's the same idea. Allowing people to opt into the things they want to learn about and making it real for them. You know, the different learning modalities, we've talked about that a little bit. I mean, with a system like ours, they're learning from different teachers, so we don't use the same teacher mm-hmm. all the way through a course. Different teachers have different ways of explaining things. Some students will
resonate
with one student where another teacher wouldn't. We use, you know, a lot of examples. There's projects that students have to go off and do, so, and then upload back into the system. Students can learn in their own language. One of the biggest challenges that our schools are facing right now is the prevalence of so many non-native English speakers.
Exactly.
And just coping with that for a school district is very difficult. So all of our courses are transcripted, can be translated into students' native language, they could hear them read mm-hmm. aloud to them mm-hmm. in English or in their native language, or they can see multiple multiple languages at once. They can hear it in English while they see it in their native language, or vice versa. Very interesting.
So what do you think are the things that are slowing you down?
Things that are slowing us down. Some things I would say are some state regulations.
Yeah, okay.
There, you know, the regulation that you have to sit in a classroom mm-hmm. for 180 days mm-hmm. and move mm-hmm. with your cohort from grade level to grade level is a challenge, because some students are ready to do that, and many students are ready to move on faster, and other students need to move more slowly. So there's a whole movement on competency-based education mm-hmm. that is going through legislatures in various states. And, you know, that's slow going. It's a big, big change, but, you know, that was a big change. We went from the one-room schoolhouse to those cohorts.
I was going to say, yeah.
You know, today our schools are still set up for the industrialized age, not the information age, the industrial age. So we need to move them ahead. And so competency-based education is a big, big piece of that. I think, you know, the professional development for teachers. Unfortunately, a lot of teachers feel threatened by online learning. Mm-hmm. And there have been movements in the past where, you know, the computer was purported to take the place of the teacher. We believe, you know, mm-hmm. the complete opposite. We need teachers. We need very caring, loving, educated, talented teachers to be a part of online learning, because the computer cannot look a student in the eye and find out if they had a bad night the night before.
That's exactly right.
So
I would also think that there's also now a challenge in the guidance counselors to have a much broader field of view to recommend just the different approaches that a student would take from junior high all through high school, but then in anticipation of, so that career element, you talked about it, and many times, I mean, you just look at the number of new jobs that have been created in the last 5 years, the titles didn't even exist.
Absolutely.
So to kind of match that, you know, how do I get from here to then the career dynamic?
Sure, and we really encourage students to be their own advocates.
Yeah.
And their parents to be advocates for their kids. I think that's critically important. Again, what we're teaching kids, the body of knowledge they're learning through high school today, you know, when they get out in the world, there's so much more to learn.
Exactly,
if they don't
yeah.
become self-directed learners, then they're going to struggle in this world. And I think that's one of the things, as much as anything else, that can be taught through online learning, is students are regulating their own progress. They mm-hmm. always mm-hmm. can see where they are in a lesson, where they are in the course of the course, and, you know, that motivates them to keep going. We often hear stories about kids who have taken an online course and then taken the subsequent course back in a traditional face-to-face mode. And the teachers tell us that after the students have taken the online course, they are self-regulating more, and they are...
So that's really... So you're, again, this is coming back to not just the content, but it's a life skill.
Absolutely.
In fact, that would be the other comment, of course, is there's all the rage to talk about teaching our students critical thinking and really life skills embedded in that. What sounds like from the approach you folks take, you can provide ancillary systems that can help cut across multiple disciplines as well as within a discipline track then.
No question. I mean, one of the things that we focus on is teaching note-taking skills.
Yeah.
We have done some research recently. We've just made some changes to our platform that enable students to take more enhanced notes and then to tag those notes to exactly the part of the curriculum where they wanted to take the note, and so that they can go back and reread those notes as they're studying for a test, back into the course, see where, you know, I'm not sure that note that I took, I'm not sure what that meant. I want to go back and look at that. So all of those things, we were finding that the kids who took more time to get through a course than speeded through a course actually did better in the course at the end. And so we found it was the note-taking that really drove that that
You know, one has to wonder, too, though, that your timing of this coming forward is also coincident with the other benefits of technology and other industries that have shifted. For example, the gaming industry. My goodness, computer gaming, you know, granted we have the gentleman that invented the Atari system, but these kids much younger now are so salient and are attracted to and play games. So the gaming element of this, too, can be of more wind in the sail, I'll call it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're looking at that research, too. How do we implement game mechanics to keep kids motivated? We like to think of our software as very engaging. It's very interactive, and kids need to continue to, they look at simulations. They look at all kinds of, they play with different explorations in the course of the curriculum. And that's a very engaging part, just like games would be.
Yeah, that's right. We've been speaking with Sari Factor, and her company is Edgenuity, based out of Phoenix, with certainly a national reach and also cutting edge on a variety of things. Mobile technology coming into play as well?
We actually have our new platform we have just announced available for tablets, iPads, whatever tablet you have. We will be playing on the iPad. I think it remains to be seen how much of a force mobile technology is in schools. School districts are definitely experimenting with it. Mm-hmm. But we want to be on every kind of platform we can be for
schools. Well, I tell you, I watch my kids. If they want to take something on, they immediately go to their smartphone and they're dialing up the internet faster than the average bear. And they can take on a pretty hefty dialogue with saying, no, wait a minute, that isn't what it says here. So
absolutely,
you don't have the choice. Well, Sari, we mentioned you've been in this field now for 30 years. How do you think you've changed the most in the course of helping others change?
Well, I think one of the things that I've been allowed to do is bring together the research on learning and what's happening in learning with the market realities of, you know, the constraints that we have given in schools and states, and pulling that all together to really create a product and to be part of a company that is really leading transformation in schools and school districts. It's exciting.
It's great. And, of course, I know your children are one in college and one graduated from college, so one has to wonder, gee, I wonder what the influence is going to be potentially on your grandchildren someday of the things that you're laying out there today.
Who knows?
Who knows exactly? Well, again, Sari Factor, it's a real pleasure. You can learn more, folks, by going to www.edgenuity.com, Edgenuity. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.